The responsive reading this morning was a bit heavy to start the day. But I think this time of year can be heavy for a lot of us. And I wanted to share it up front to set the stage for what I'm going to talk about. Tomorrow is New Year's Eve, a time when many of us look back over the year, taking stock of how things went, the highlights and the not-so-highlights, remembering the people who have come into our lives, and also remembering those that have left. We might recall big milestones, a change in our working life, or a move to a new home. And we may recall smaller moments, a beautiful sunset, laughing at a favorite TV show. And we look forward to the coming year as a clean slate, an opportunity to start afresh with goals and commitments to be in some way better. But the reality is that the start of a new year does not wipe our slate clean on its own. That is something we can choose to do, though. I think of each year as a circle. I imagine a roller coaster that does one of those full loop-de-loops. And midwinter is right at the top of that circle, where for a moment there is a brief hang time before we plunge ahead into the next year. So I invite us to sit in that time, as most holidays are drawing to a close, and before tumbling into 2019, to pause and reflect on how we can live into our potential, our values, a bit more in the next 365 days. And I hope it's not a leap year, I didn't check that. Another word that gets used often this time of year is intention. It is a gentler way of saying goal or resolution. We might set the intention to be proactive about our health, or the intention to be better to the earth, or the intention to be a kinder person. But without some sort of action, these intentions will never blossom. I'd like to look at another way that we use the word intention, especially in our UU context. We often talk about assuming good intentions. When we say this, we mean when someone says something that doesn't land well, we are to assume that they meant well, even if their comments were misguided. The following is from an article entitled "Intent Versus Impact: Why Your Intentions Don't Really Matter." Imagine for a moment that you're standing with your friends in a park, enjoying a nice summer day. You don't know me, but I walk up close to you holding a frisbee. I wind up and throw that disc, and it hits you right in the face. Understandably, you are indignant. Through a bloody nose and a choice few words, you ask me what I was doing. And my response, "Oh, I didn't mean to hit you. That was never my intent. I was simply trying to throw my frisbee to my friend over there." Visibly upset, you demand an apology. But I refuse. Or worse, I offer an apology that sounds like, "I'm sorry your face got in the way of my frisbee. I never intended to hit you." While it might be helpful in the heat of the moment to assume good intentions, that I did not intend to hit you in the face with my frisbee, it does not change the fact that your face is in pain. Here's another example. A few years ago, I was out having tea with a friend. She was going through a really tough time and had recently lost her father. Along with this, her relationship was on the rocks and her work life wasn't great. She told me she was suffering from depression and was barely eating. She had lost a significant amount of weight due to her grief, stress, and depression. As we were talking, a mutual acquaintance we hadn't seen in a while came into the shop. She saw us and came over to say hi. She turned to my friend and said, "Wow, you look great. I remember you being much heavier, but you look really good now. Whatever you're doing is working. I wish I could lose a few pounds myself." Now, obviously, this acquaintance had good intentions. However, that did not make my friend feel any better. Instead, she said it only made her feel worse. It was as if the woman had said, "Sorry, your dad died and your life is falling apart. At least you look good." As if looking good was all that mattered, and that thinness meant goodness. I don't want to suggest that we throw out assuming good intentions completely, but it cannot stop there. It is too easy for this idea to relieve someone of the responsibility for their actions. And it puts the weight of the interaction on the person who has been harmed. While it may lessen my hurt to know that something was accidental instead of intentional, there needs to be another step taken by the person doing the harm. If we simply leave it at that, "Well, you didn't mean to throw the frisbee in my face," it does nothing to prevent the same thing from happening again. I'm sure most of us can think of a time when someone has done something with best intention, only to leave us feeling hurt or rejected. And the less privilege we have, the more often we encounter this, and the heavier it hits. The sexist joke in the office. The racist comment at the family gathering. The excuses, "I didn't mean to. It wasn't my intent. I'm not a racist, a sexist," etc. Reverend Ella Isaacs, the author of The Responsive Reading, has said that he originally wrote it in the first person, which gives it a much different power. I forgive myself and others, and I begin again in love. The version was deemed too intimate for our hymnal, where it was changed from first person singular to the we of the first person plural. And this, what I've been talking about, intent and impact, can feel very personal. When we are on the side of making a mistake, it is safe to hide behind intent. Because if we don't, what does that mean about us? Do we, I, become the bad guy? I can tell you, I know this is not a comfortable place. I remember being in seminary, and we were in a class waiting to hear if we had gotten an extension on a paper a lot of us were hoping for. My professor said she would not grant the extension, and I muttered under my breath, "Ugh, that's so lame." A classmate turned to me and let me know, somewhat kindly, that the word lame was hurtful to people with disabilities, especially the way that I had used it. I can remember my gut reaction, wanting to assure her I didn't mean it. I care about all people. I'm a good UU. I'm a good person. She let me know, firmly, but kindly, that I had work to do on my language, and that was that. I have learned since then to separate what I did from what I am. I am by no means an expert at it. After all, I am only human, But it is something that can help me in the moments when I feel my defensiveness rising. I may not be able to change who I am at my core, but I can certainly work on changing what I do. Humans make mistakes. And this might come as a shock, and it might sadden some of you, but perfection is not achievable. And that's okay. What's not okay is refusing to acknowledge our shortcomings so that we don't have to face hard feelings. When someone is brave enough to bring to our attention ways in which our words and/or actions hurt others, focusing on what you did instead of what you are is a helpful way to move from defensiveness to humility. When I first chose the reading today that was an inspiration for the sermon, I only knew it by its refrain, "We Begin Again in Love," not by its title, "Litany of Atonement." However, atonement is a good word to use on the cusp of a new year. In Jewish tradition, God inscribes each person's fate for the coming year into the Book of Life on Rosh Hashanah, the first day of the new year. God then waits until Yom Kippur, 10 days later, the Day of Atonement, to seal his verdict. During this time, Jewish people try to amend their behavior and seek forgiveness for wrongs done against God and against other humans. The evening and day of Yom Kippur are set aside for public and private petitions and confessions of guilt. The religious concept of atonement means reparations for sin. Now, I know sin is not a common word among us UUs. I was taught by a UU theology professor to think about sin as anything that separates us from God. And to push that a bit further, I would suggest one of the ways that we UUs often understand God or holiness or divinity is beloved community. God might also be nature or balance. So we can think of sin in this context of atonement as anything that keeps us separate from each other, from community, from the earth, from love and life. Let us return to that moment on the top of the roller coaster loop. We are being given a chance to start again. An opportunity to look back over the last year and forward to the next. And what a perfect time to consider this idea of atonement. So what might UU atonement look like? Reverend Eller Isaacs offers us the idea that we should forgive ourselves and each other and begin again in love. In Jamie Utt's article I previously referenced with the Frisbee story, he says, "When we are told that the impact of our action, inaction, or words is hurtful and furthers oppression, we can start by apologizing without any caveats. From there, we can spend time to reflect in hopes of gaining at least some understanding, however marginal, of the harmful impact. And we can do our best to move forward, acting more accountably." He boils this down to listen, reflect, apologize, do better. Listen, reflect, apologize, do better. And I think that is a perfect way to implement what it means to begin again in love.